You're wrapping up a tour with A Loving Spoonful. How's that going?
Well, we've been kind of working constantly since 92. We do about 30, 35 gigs a year, or concerts, and it's just, you know, a regular thing. So it's not so much a tour as it is a series of weekends, and lots of people are doing that as opposed to long tours.
A weekend here and a weekend there.
Well, it's, two or three a month, that kind of thing.
Ah, and it's probably easy to access different points in the country from where you are in Arkansas.
Well, and where we are in New York and Florida and Minnesota, which we're spread all over the place and meet where we're playing.
Ah, I see. The band assembles itself at the venue.
Yeah. Or at the airport near the venue. Sometimes it's a 2-hour drive to the gig, depending on where the gig is. Let's say once in a while we'll do like a 2 or even 3 weeks out doing a series of concerts. We did one 2 winters ago, renting a van again, one of those things you can stand up in, and it's got, you know, captain's chairs and internet and widescreen TV and a driver. If the agency can put together enough concerts in a string, it makes sense to do that. But most of the acts are working in that way as opposed to tours. So, you know, like the first string, the guys out there working arenas of, 50 to 100,000 people are, in that ilk. We'll do long tours with buses and trucks and stuff like that. It's not financially feasible for groups that have been out there, unless it's the Stones, that have been out there as long as we have.
Well, so that's as close to a tour bus as you get.
Well, once in a while, as I say, like we did a tour with America. It was like 2.5 weeks, something like that, and we were all in buses. It's just not common for us. For us, it's flying to. There's one other member here in Harrison, Arkansas, and we drive to Springfield, Missouri, and then fly to wherever we're going. And all the other fellows do the same.
You've got a gig coming up in New York shortly, don't you?
Well, I leave day after tomorrow for Niagara Falls. Actually, on the Canadian side, we fly into Buffalo. And let's see, the one after that, at the end of September, I'm trying to remember where that is. I might have it written down here, actually. Wouldn't that be handy? Anyway, it's somewhere at the end of September. I kind of, I don't find out like the day I'm leaving, but kind of closer to the gig.
How can people find out more about your gigs?
Well, go to lovinspoonful.com. That's a good way. Also, there's a website called polestar.com.
Oh, yes.
And that's a great source of information for anybody. If you want to know where anybody is playing, Polestar has 90% of the information. And a lot of people, 100% of the information.
Cool. How did the Loving Spoonful get its name?
It's from an old blues. What was it? Let me see. I'm trying to think of the old blues. It was, this blues player would do a song and he would end it with drinking a cup of coffee. And he would say, "That's how I love my baby, by the Loving Spoonful." It was mentioned in his song.
It might have been Willie Dixon, though I can't swear to it.
It's my memory's not quite awake yet, I'm sorry to say.
You too, huh?
For too long, yeah. but it was one of those guys. Anyway, John thought of the name, John Sebastian. And at first it was kind of, well, I don't know how it sounds. You know, the other guys weren't quite on board with it, but it worked out to be a real good idea.
You and your brother played the club circuit in the early 1960s. What was that like?
Well, the club circuit around L.A., little coffee houses and stuff like that, and some junior colleges. And it was very exciting for, you know, I was 17 years old just out of Burbank. Our parents moved away when I was 17. They asked me if I wanted to go with them. I said, nope. And so we stayed in Burbank and migrated out of Burbank to West L.A. where everything was happening in Sunset Strip. And it was absolutely exciting. Worked as a duo, the two of us. And then he went in the Army, and I joined a group called the In-Group, and we were part of the New Christy Minstrels, the very first formation of that group, and did the first album, which got an Emmy. A Grammy, as a matter of fact. And then joined the Monofolk Quartet, basically, and moved to New York.
You played on 11 Spoonfuls, Do You Believe in Magic, while you were still with the Modern Folk Quartet. What was that like?
Well, it was. I was real good friends with John and Zolly.
Zolyanovsky.
Before there was 11 Spoonful. They were folkies like I was. And then after the British invasion, all these folkies that we knew eventually turned into folk rockers, like the MFQ. Within a year of the British invasion, we were a folk rock band. And we were turning into one kind of in the summer of 64 when we started all getting really serious about it and making Eric Jacobson, who was in the Knobloch Upper Tin's house in a bluegrass group, started producing records. And we worked on his demos, John and Denny Doherty and Cass Elliott and Zolly and Henry Diltz from the Modern Folk Quartet. And then Cass suggested that John and Zolly get a group together, and then that became the 11 Spoonful. And I helped them out with vocal arrangements on their first album and played on Magic because I played piano and John wanted a piano on it. So it was all kind of very friendly, a lot of camaraderie in those days amongst all the musicians of the village.
When you said Henry Diltz, do you mean the photographer, Henry Diltz?
That's who I mean. He was a member of the 11 Spoonful. The 11 Spoonful, help. He was a member of the Modern Folk Quartet. And we were doing a tour in 1965 as a folk rock group in a Clark Cortez, which was the first driving motor home that there was in the country. And when we went through East Lansing, Michigan, on our way to New York, everybody bought cameras, and Henry bought his first camera. And a year later, he was making his living with it.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. So was the first slideshow that we showed after getting back from the road, and everybody laughed at everybody's picture until we got to Henry's. And it's like, whoa, it's got a future here.
Yeah, it's sort of like cell phone selfies, only better.
Yep. He was right from the beginning. He was very impressive.
How did you step in to replace Zolyanovsky when he left the Spoonful?
Well, because I was close with the group, and when Zolly decided to leave, John called me and asked if I wanted to replace him. And I said, "Well, I better think about it," because I was producing then. I just produced the Association's second album and Tim Buckley's second album. And but it seemed like a real good idea. Felt very natural. So a week later, I moved back to New York.
Why don't you tell us more about producing the Turtles and Tim Buckley?
Well, Tim was an amazing, amazing artist. He and his partner, Larry Beckett, they were really a team. And really very idealistic and extremely talented. And it was a joy doing that album. I mean, it was so easy to work with and just great ideas. And
which album was this?
Huh?
Which album was this?
It's called Goodbye and Hello.
Yes.
And I produced, Zolly and I produced his third album called Happy Sad. After The Spoonful, I moved back to L.A. And a short time after that, I called Zolly, and because we had I had produced his solo album while I was in The Spoonful. And we had a great time together and had a lot of simpatico in the studio. So I asked him if he wanted to be partners in producing, and he moved to L.A. and we became Hairshirt Productions and did four albums, among them Pat Boone, his last pop album. Yeah. His last pop album called Departure. And the Fifth Avenue Band and Judy Hinsky's in my album Farewell Aldebaran. And as I said, Buckley. And then after Zolly and I, Zolly moved back to New York and or Canada, one or the other, and then started working with Chris Christopherson. And I started producing by myself again, did The Turtles. And that was a lot of fun producing them. A lot of good material, but they broke up right at the end of that. The record company went bankrupt.
White Whale Records.
White Whale, yeah. And and that was kind of it for the Turtles, too. They kind of stopped shortly after that. And Howard and Mark started working with Frank Zappa.
Speaking of Frank Zappa, your album with Judy Hensky was on Zappa's Straight label. How did you connect right. with Zappa?
Well, we had the same manager. And I knew Frank from right at the very beginning, before the Mothers were, before he put the Mothers together. Met him in the clubs. And I always liked Frank a lot. He's an enormously talented guy. And it was Herbie and Frank started Bizarre Records. And
Herb Cohen, you mean?
Yeah. And he was my manager and Frank's manager. And it was just a kind of a natural thing. We were never involved in the making of the record, but I always got very positive input from him for this stuff.
The Love and Spoonful did soundtracks for Woody Allen, What's Up Tiger Lily, and Francis right. Ford Coppola, You're a Big Boy Now. What was it like working with those directors?
I wasn't in the group then. I hadn't replaced Zolly yet. But I was told that they had a great time. I think the whole thing with Woody Allen was done in like 1 or 2 days. They just improvised in the studio. And they had a great time, although I heard that Woody wasn't crazy about it. I have no idea, really, about that. But as far as Coppola goes, I don't know much about that either. But it was his first movie, I know that. And just to say, some good songs are written for it.
In 68, when John B. Sebastian left The Spoonful made one last single, Never Going Back. It's a wonderful record, but it sounded more like, more country than I was used to hearing from The Spoonful. What led to that stylistic change?
There was a lot of, Nashville cats, of course.
That too, yes.
On the last album, there were quite a few country-flavored things. John was always enraptured by the players in country music, and so that was always just lurking in the background. The group broke up in 68. When John left, that was kind of it. And we decided to call it a day also. Although, because of the way he put it, Steve and Joe and I ended up with the ownership of the group. And then Joe, because no one, Steve or I, were not interested in continuing, Joe did a solo album, and he used Never Going Back to Nashville, which is a John Stewart song, and produced by Chip Douglas, actually, who was a member of the Modern Folk Quartet, who also produced The Monkees and Daydream Believer, which was out shortly before that. Anyway, we made that before the group broke up, and John was not involved. He was not. He was kind of on his way out, and so Joe used that as part of his album called Revelation Revolution.
Why did John leave the band?
I wanted to go solo, and it was a good idea. I mean, he wanted to call more and more of the shots in the studio, and which was not making it comfortable for everyone else. More before I joined. When I joined, it was a very democratic thing. In fact, it might have been overly democratic in my direction because it was very orchestrated, and I was a budding orchestrator at the time and just having a great time with the New York Philharmonic and the Ray Charles Band.
The New York Philharmonic?
Oh, yeah. We had the first chair of the New York Philharmonic was our string contractor, and a guy in Ray Charles' band was our brass contractor, and a string contractor also contracted the woodwind. So we had total orchestra available. So it was heaven for me, but a very highly orchestrated album for 11 Spoonful album. But I had a lot of fondness for it. I don't know if I'd do it the same if we were to redo it now. If I could go back, I don't know if I'd do it the same way. But anyway, that was how that went.
Your brother James was in the association. You actually produced one of that band's albums. What was that like?
The second album. Well, it's the only album that they made in those days where they played everything. And that was one thing I insisted on. Because they were a very good band, but it was the common practice of producers to use, you know, like the Wrecking Crew or, you know, even the Byrds didn't play anything on their first album except for McGuinn. Spoonful was one of the few bands that, on the West Coast anyway, that played everything themselves. But the association had a great time doing that album. It wasn't a big album, and maybe because of that, and maybe because it was my very first production, and I kind of learned on them. But in spite of all of that, the songs were very good. The arrangements were very good. Production could have been better. As I said, I learned a lot from them. But I still I think it's a real good album. And they really rose to the occasion, played their asses off.
Cool. What are your plans for the future? Do you plan any more, tours, for lack of a better word?
Well, we're just ongoing with a Spoonful. I'm doing more solo work, and I'm very interested in that, setting up solo tours. I'm working three nights a week in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, solo, and really like that a lot. It's a great, great town. It's the most liberal place in the South, and I just love it for that. A lot of art, a lot of great people there. Very small population, but a lot of tourists. They get a lot of tourists there, so it's a wonderful place to play. And I've been working there for the last going on 6 years, this month, as a matter of fact, and. But I want to get out. I've done quite a few solo concerts out of Arkansas, including Germany, and L.A. and Minnesota and Iowa and, you know, just in surrounding areas, and doing a solo on the same bill with my brother, as a matter of fact, in October in Tennessee. And I'm really liking that a lot. I'm loving working solo. Just with one instrument, either guitar or Ozark Mountain banjo. that I'm crazy about. It's a wooden banjo, and it kind of has the sound of a banjo, but it's more like a dulcimer, but a bigger, you know, it's a beautiful sounding instrument. And piano I also use.
Unplugged, so to speak.
Well, they're all electrified. It's an acoustic guitar. It's just electrified and has some effects on it, you know. It doesn't sound like an electric guitar. So in that sense, yes, it is unplugged. All the unplugged things I've done, I've seen more cables on the stage. So it's kind of an odd term.
Mr. Yester, thank you for granting me this interview, and sure. Have a great day.
And I will have my website up in the next month. It'd be jerryester.com, so have a look at that.
Okay, I'll tell my listeners to watch out for that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
You too.